Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. I'm coming at you from rural North Carolina once again. Steve's back in Ohio. And Steve, I saw your Facebook post about the Deadpool.
It timed up. The way it timed up was pretty crazy. I mean, we had done our show, I think, on Monday, and then Tuesday, Gary Cohn, the top economic advisor for Trump, puts in his resignation, and that was that. So the Deadpool was reset.
If Hope Hicks counts, his chief economic advisor also counts. Did you happen to catch any of the press conference when he was sort of saying goodbye to Gary Cohn?
No, I didn't.
It was fucking weird. He was saying things like, he's a really good guy. Yeah, he's kind of a globalist. Well, he's really not a globalist. Yeah, he's a globalist. And I'm like, you are literally talking to Alex Jones's crowd right now. It was bizarre, and of course it was not scripted, so it came off Trump style.
You have to kind of wonder, does Trump really even get what a globalist is? If he actually knew what it was, I sometimes I just question if he, a lot of times it seems like he gets up there and just kind of starts talking and doesn't really have good background information on what he's saying.
I would like to remind you, he has the best words. The Deadpool's reset. I kind of think that bailed you out a little bit. I think Tillerson was
Tillerson was risky, and especially now with where they are with these negotiations with North Korea. I think if I was really thinking that out, I may have been able to get to Gary Cohn. He's gone now. So now we really are down to kind of a select group of people who are relatively entrenched. So, now it's a real shot in the dark.
Do you want to go first or would you like me to?
I'll go first. You went first last time. I think Jared Kushner is going to be the next to be out. I think just he's got so many vulnerabilities with the debt that he has, his lack of political savvy, some of the positions that Trump has put him in that he's not really prepared for, and with no real sort of guidance, as a lot of people are kind of staying away from the Trump administration for fear of kind of being branded. I think that because he is such a liability, that at some point Trump is going to ask him to step down, or he will take the hint and hand in his resignation. So I'm going to go with Jared Kushner.
I think it's a very solid pick. That was very high on my list. I'm going to go with a bit of a change up though. I'm going to go with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think she, for the first time, said stuff that bothered Trump. He attacked her, and she's really easy to replace. I mean, press secretaries come and go regularly with all presidencies. If I'm her getting publicly criticized or privately criticized by the president after the number of times that she has stood there and just flat out, lied for him, I think she might. I think she could go of her own volition, or she could get pushed out the door because she did a very poor job of masking the Stormy Daniels accusations, which will not go away.
Yeah, I just, I kind of wonder. I guess my thing with the whole Stormy Daniels thing is just that I wonder if Trump even cares about that. I think he kind of looks at it as, either he'll say it didn't happen and she's a liar and everybody's lying, Or he'll just say it did happen and it's really nobody's business. And, you know, the only thing people are hanging on is that the attorney paid her off. And they're trying to say that was a campaign finance violation, a campaign finance law violation, which even if it is, like, that's not enough to impeach him. Right?
Like, is that a legal thing or just an ethical thing? Like, can you get?
Okay, I guess so. It's. I mean, how is that? This is the same guy who's basically shutting down the EPA. You know, I mean, like, there's some ethical considerations there as well. But again, you can clearly he's not too worried about. I mean, he, you know, his kid was just born. And he's sleeping with the porn. I mean, I don't even know if he's cheating on her. Did he? I mean, he seemed like he might have even told Melania. Like, no one's bringing this up. Like, where's Melania and all this?
I mean, it's
almost like they just assumed that she knew.
I've heard a few people say, like, you know, Melania must be pissed. I'm thinking, Melania's going to be saying, better her than me.
Obviously. But still, you know, they still had this image that she, you know, she's his wife. And, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, he attacked Bill Clinton about being, about being
sure.
unfaithful and infidelity issues and things like that. So, I think there's the moral aspect and the ethical, but from a legal standpoint, what does it get you? Like, I mean, he's already proven that. You know, he can say and do a lot of things and it's not going to shake his base. You know, his base is going to defend him no matter what. They're already defending. I mean, like, they just deflect it.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
They say either Bill Clinton was worse, or they go to the fact that, well, it didn't matter. He wasn't president, and he didn't lie about it under oath. And so, you know, there's no there.
Steve, in all seriousness, I don't care that he banged a porn star. I didn't care that Bill Clinton got a blowjob. I didn't care that Bill Clinton lied about a blowjob. I guess under oath, it's a different story. But I care nothing about who these people are fucking or not fucking, unless they're fucking the American public or me. And so as long as there's a porn star in the story,
you know,
though.
And it's just like, it's funny, though. I kind of wish that, you know, some of these people who are defending Trump, like, you know, it's just, you know, they're kind of taking that same approach of, well, he's doing such a good job as president, I don't care who he sleeps with. And it's kind of like, yeah, well, why do you care so much who gay people sleep with, or, you know,
there's
transgender
that.
People and all that other stuff? Like, I mean, that's where there's a little bit of hypocrisy here, but
there's a lot of hypocrisy.
Not you, in particular, but I'm saying the Trump defenders.
I completely understand, and you're right. I'm trying to be consistent. I didn't care when Bill Clinton did it. I don't. I mean, I think if you did, there is a book about presidential mistresses. As far as I know, there is not a president who didn't have one. My favorite example is FDR had a mistress. It was well known, and he was in a fucking wheelchair.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Obama had one, though.
Probably not. He probably didn't, and he may be the only one.
Yeah.
And George Washington may not have, but we know Thomas Jefferson did.
Right.
All right. So anyway,
where does Abe Lincoln fall on that?
Well, I don't know where you're going, but there's a couple ways you could be going there.
I'm just saying, I mean, the rumor is that Abe Lincoln, you know, had a man friend.
Yes. Yes. That's where I thought you were going.
I mean, I guess that still counts, but
yes,
I mean,
yeah.
Who knows?
It's,
maybe
it's,
that's
well,
why his wife
te-
went nuts,
technically,
but
it's not a mistress. You got me there. You got me on a technicality.
So anyway, so Gary Cohn leaving. The reason why Gary Cohn left is essentially these tariffs. I did a Facebook post on the tariffs, a Facebook Live post on the tariffs, and essentially, you know, Gary Cohn was. I think he said, "Listen, if you do this, I believe it'll have, you know, irreparable harm to the economy, and it's either me or the tariffs." And Trump said, "Screw you, it's, you know, we need these tariffs." And so Gary Cohn said, "All right, well, I'm out." And you know, I have mixed thoughts about the tariffs. I think that they're you know, are they potentially dangerous? Absolutely, right? I mean, we're charging outside people extra money to bring their stuff in, which means that they could turn around and flip and do the same to us. You know, goods that rely on, you know, steel and aluminum, the cost for those things initially, we have to assume are going to go up. And the question is, how do we respond to that? And how do we deal with it? And then also, what are some of the other things that could happen? Like, what are the repercussions? Like, what will other foreign countries start to charge us for our goods and our particular goods, our raw materials going into their countries, which then could, you know, which also impacts prices here. You know, my first thought was, all that is not good because of the uncertainty, you know, because we don't know what's going to happen, right? And what sort of impact is this going to have on, you know, our relationship with China and goods coming from China? And, you know, how is that going to impact cost? You know, me being in the real estate business, you know, I'm fortunate right now. We had to go through and look at all our projects, but we don't have any new construction projects. Everything we have is rehab, so there's not a lot of steel and aluminum, so it won't impact our pricing too much initially. But, you know, there was some concern there. But on the flip side of, you know, the concern, listen, I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. And, you know, in the 90s when NAFTA was signed, I mean, that was pretty much a death warrant for the area that I grew up in. You know, steel mills, they started closing, you know, faster than you could count. You know, I mean, it was layoff after layoff, and my dad got laid off from one, he got laid off from another, to eventually where he just wasn't working anymore. And so I saw the impact of it directly, and that was when NAFTA was signed, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and that is what kind of ended the tariffs. And it's exactly what it's all. It's free trade. It's you know, hey, we can all trade with each other, and as well, you bring yours in, and I'll ship mine over here. And before that, we did have tariffs. And so the question is, you know, if this, maybe this drives prices up, but at the same time, if it revitalizes certain industries and helps to, you know, get people back working, then, you know, maybe it isn't the end of the world, because at some point in time, the prices will adjust.
So I've got a couple of things to say about that. I'm also from a steel town that collapsed, you know, Buffalo, New York, obviously, when my parents' generation was growing up, there were people who thought my dad was an idiot for going to college because you're gonna have the steel mills here forever, and obviously they didn't. But there's a bunch of things I don't like about this. One is, this feels very unilateral from Trump. I mean, he spoke in front of the steel and aluminum folks, and then the next thing you know, it's happening. I didn't know something like that could happen that quickly without some sort of congressional involved.
An executive order.
I didn't know you could slap tariffs on with an executive order. I think it's a pretty big reach. So, and the key thing I think that I also think about is what you said, instability. So the stock market until today had been getting pounded in the last couple days because this guy opens his mouth and all of a sudden things are happening. So the notion that the president really doesn't affect the Dow typically is true, but when the president is changing the level of security in the economy, suddenly it's not true anymore. And this is one of the very few instances I can think of where a president's actions had a direct and immediate impact on the stock market the way it did. I don't know. Again, it's that plus the fact that most economists are saying this is a bad idea. Now, most economists don't give a shit about Buffalo and Youngstown, and it's truly a Wall Street versus Main Street thing. So I'm concerned because of the apparent lack of thought that went into this and the fact that it literally drove his ego into driving away his economic advisor. But
you know, the one thing Trump has been saying, talking about tariffs but long before he was running for president. You know, you can go back through his tweets, you know, back to 2012 or whenever he started tweeting, and there are references to them then. And I guess part of me says, listen, yes, there is the instability because we don't know what's going to happen. But I don't know if that should, you know, the fear of the unknown may not be the best way to handle policy, right? And so, you know, maybe it is a risk worth taking. You know, and I mean, if we take a complete bath on it, then, I mean, that's just one more feather in, you know, the Democrats' hat in 2020. You know, but unfortunately, to get that, it's going to take, you know, it would impact everybody's wallet. But at the same time, to get him out of office, I mean, it may take something like that where you could say, listen, he did this, and now look, you know, all these people are struggling financially. You know, he did this great tax thing that everyone, you know, that, you know, he was so quick to praise. But, you know, he turned around and slapped tariffs on steel and aluminum. And now, you know, I'm pretty sure everyone would give up their tax policy for, you know, someone to remove these, to get things back to where they were. You know, so we don't know what the future holds. So I think, while I have concerns about it, I'm not necessarily looking at it as it's the end of the world. It's the worst thing ever. We really have to watch how it plays out. You know, and the other thing, you know, you said about the economists, economists are wrong. Like they're almost as bad as weathermen, if not worse. Because, you know, like economists are the ultimate non-risk takers. So, you know, good luck finding one that agrees anything out of the ordinary is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And typically I would say that when you make a move like this, it takes, excuse me, it takes years for an industry to build back the capacity to fill the gaps that get created by this. But in this case, I don't think that's true because there's a lot of steel mills. My you know, ex-girlfriend's dad works for a steel mill, and I know that they were cutting jobs and cutting production.
Well,
so,
to cut you off, there's a steel mill in Lorain that's actually firing back up, Lorain County, Ohio here. And it's going to, like, it should be ready in the next, you know, few months, and it's going to be about 1,000 jobs.
You know, I'm going to
reserve
judgment.
For me, as much as, you know, I'm not a fan of Trump, or, you know, I don't like him and a lot of his policies. And there's some policies of his that I am vehemently against, but I can't get mad at this. This, you know, I watched what happened. I lived it when they sold everyone that free trade was good. You know, maybe it was for everybody else, but all I know is that it ruined Christmas for my family for about 15 years.
Understood.
You know, my dad really didn't get back on his feet until the mid-2000s. And even then, it was a struggle. So that's why I'm open to see something different. I'm open to seeing it because we've had this now for, I think, NAFTA came in like 96, I want to say, or 94.
I thought that was a Clinton era thing. It definitely was.
Yeah, well, it was
92 to
first,
2000. Yeah, somewhere in that range.
First year was
92 was his first year. So
yeah, so what it was Clinton's first year, and so, but I mean, it was initiated by Bush. It, you know, Bush got a lot of pushback on it, but then Clinton came in and kind of rode in on the white horse, signed NAFTA. You know, open the gates of free trade, and then threw a bunch of black kids in prison.
Now, here's the other part of it about it though. Trump has said that the tariffs will not apply to Mexico and Canada, which is NAFTA.
Right, and I don't know how much steel we get from
a
Mexico
lot.
And Canada.
I think Canada's our largest. We import more from Canada than any other country.
Oh, so then this is directed at China.
Yes, and India.
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see. You know, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not gonna write it off as the worst thing ever just because it came from Trump.
I agree.
And you know, we don't typically like the word tariffs. You know, as long as it doesn't impact the cost of whiskey. Although someone said it may impact the cost of Canadian whiskey, which I was like, all right, who cares? although there's some good Canadian whiskeys. You know, they're good. not great, but there's some good Canadian whiskeys.
You know, I don't remember the last time I had Canadian whiskey. Crown, I used to drink Crown Royal every now and then. I got sick as fuck on Seagram's years ago.
One thing we do back home, it's called a stiletto. It is chilled Canadian Club with just a drop of amaretto. You shake it up, and it's our summertime shot. It's also like it goes down relatively smooth as long as you like amaretto, and it can be lethal. Like because we can rip a bunch of them off at a time, and that ends with some things going wrong.
Canadian Club in Buffalo when I was a kid was like the high-end working man's whiskey. I'm not a fan. Okay, I'm not a fan.
Whiskey.
I got really tore up on Seagram's in college, and I don't think I've touched that shit since. And Seagram's and Canadian Club are too close for comfort for me. So the other huge thing coming out of the White House is the announcement that Trump and Kim Jong-un are going to have a meeting, and it's going to happen in South Korea and could happen as soon as May. I've got some very strong feelings about this, but I'd like to throw it to you first.
One, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, there's a long time between now and May for that to get derailed by either one of these two guys that are head cases. Especially when it comes to each other, although there seems to be some sort of a weird spark in North Korea's step lately with the rhetoric coming out of their camp. So I'll be curious to see what happens. Now, you know, North Korea has been angling to get, you know, in front of the president of the United States for, I don't know, 30 years. And it's been our standard policy to, you know, not allow that to happen. Until they gave up their nukes. Now I'm leaning more towards this is a bad move and Trump shouldn't do it. And, you know, just leave them isolated there. But at the same time, we've been doing that for the last 30 years. And he's all that's happened is the country has gotten more and more aggressive, most aggressive with Kim Jong-un. The most recent oon of the oons or the ills or the Kims or whatever. I guess it's a wait and see, but I'm waiting and seeing with a very judgmental eye. You know, I'm giving it that grandmotherly side eye, like you're about to do something, you know, that's going to get you in a lot of trouble.
Okay. I love it. I think that I agree with the one thing you said there that I really agree with is we've been doing nothing but trying to sanction and squeeze them for more than 30 years. And I fully think I also agree that either one of these guys could blow this up with one ill-advised tweet or statement. I think it's great that we're talking to North Korea or potentially going to talk to North Korea. Because without the willingness to talk, nothing comes of anything. I also think from an intelligence standpoint, this could be a really good opportunity for us to gain intelligence into the North Korean, war, whatever, sphere. Because we have essentially no real solid intelligence there. And I think it's very... We've talked about this before on the show. We need to know, does Kim Jong-un act like this because he knows it gets attention, brings him hope that he can get other countries to jump through hoops? Or is the dude's reality button just plain fucking gone? And does he actually believe, like, he can militarily take on the Western world and win? I don't know the answer to that. And something like this gives you a much better chance of learning.
Yeah, you're right. And that's why, you know, I said, I guess I don't like it, but I'll do it. Which is okay. I tell people that all the time. Like, I don't like a lot of things, but I do them. And I reserve the right to openly complain about them, but I'm still doing it. So shut the fuck up. And that's kind of where I'm at with this. I don't like it. I reserve the right to say, I don't think this is the best idea, but, you're doing it and there's potential there. You're right. You have to be willing to come to the table and have a conversation in order for change and progress to be made. So, you know, that's, I completely see the wisdom there. I still just don't like it.
Okay.
You know, here's a question though. What does this do? Let's say, let's just fast forward and we have removed the nuclear weapons. They stopped their nuclear weapons program. You know, they have some unification talks and they start to unify with South Korea, and all is well, and it's all happy and good by, you know, 2020.
Okay.
What does that do for Trump's legacy at that point?
You know, I don't really care. If Trump's legacy is a positive one because he turns things around, I'm happy about that. I don't expect it, but you know, I'm not worried about people saying, well, you know, he's really doing a great job with North Korea, so we got to give this guy another 4 years. I don't see that happening. And you know,
you don't, I mean,
no,
well,
I don't.
I think that that's naive to think that. I mean, if things are going really well with Trump, or with North Korea in 4 years with Trump, like his team is going to use that. And people, like obviously his base will soak it up, but the people on the, there are people on the fence who the Democrats are going to target, which I think is the wrong move, by the way, who might be swayed by seeing that. They're like, listen, he finally got this guy to shut up. You know, why wouldn't I vote for him? Why would I want to stop that, impede that, when the next person who comes in may screw that all up?
I think it's very likely.
Let's say the tariffs actually are successful and this thing with North Korea actually works out. Like, there are people who will absolutely look at that and say, hey, that worked for me. I don't want to disrupt what's happening here. I don't want things to go backwards. So let's stay with the hot hand, you know, like a running back in football. And so, you know, slipping, you know, a little sidebar, I think Democrats have to kind of keep that in mind and don't do what they've been doing for the last, I don't know, 30 years and waiting until the last 2 weeks of an election, you know, to go on black radio talk shows and go into a couple churches and think that they're going to get the black vote, because, you know, black voters have said that, listen, we may not like either candidate, but we won't vote for you just because, and we will stay home, right? Which is a big part of the reason why Trump got elected, is because you saw, you know, record numbers of black people staying home and not voting for either Hillary or Donald Trump.
Yeah, but how do you think a successful policy with North Korea is going to impact the black vote dramatically?
Well, it's not, Jim. And what I'm saying is, so it's not, but it will impact, it will shift white voters, right? It will shift white voters who are on the fence. And so what Democrats need to do is they better get on the ground, get on their feet, and get knocking on doors and going to churches. And they need to start doing that shit now. They need to start doing it for 2018, and they need to start doing it for 2020, and they need to start addressing issues that actually impact the black community, things that we care about. Because we don't really, like, the black community doesn't give a damn about North Korea. You could argue whether they should or not, but they don't.
And okay,
so
someone
better start talking to them about things that affect them, or else they will stay home again, and the Democrats will be sitting there holding their dicks like, what the fuck happened? And it'll be like, you know, it'll be 2016 all over for them again, and then we'll hear the same shit out of Tom Perez, like, oh, we made a critical error and not courting the black vote. It's like, well, how many times do you need to make that critical error?
I don't disagree with anything you're saying. I just think that because of what you said, I think this particular issue, if I'm staying on North Korea, A, I don't think it impacts the black vote at all, and B,
I know, Jim, it was a sidebar.
Okay, sorry. All right.
Sidebar.
Okay.
But I understand,
all right,
that.
Let me go. All right, let me go to a different point. This might hurt him with his base. I think a lot of his base wants a war with an easily beatable cartoonish character, and a move towards peace and military de-escalation might actually not play well with his base.
Listen, I won't argue that I think there are people in his base who want a war with North Korea. I don't think the war with North Korea would be an easy win. I think we would lose. I think there would be a lot of bloodshed. I think we would, at some point in time, we would eventually have to go in. And because we don't know enough about it, I think just not having that intel could be pretty harmful. Not to mention the risk to other countries in the region.
That's a big thing.
So, there's a lot of damage there. But if he does figure it out, I don't see it hurting him, honestly. Like, I mean, come on, let's think this out. His base is so entrenched, and like they will support him no matter what. As long as he doesn't do something, just like as long as he doesn't convert to Islam and start, sucking dicks on TV, like there's just nothing he can do that they're gonna like. If he says peace with North Korea, they'll support him. If he says war with North Korea, they'll support him. If he says peace with North Korea, they'll say, oh, look, that's Obama couldn't even do that, and he was this great peacemaker. If they go to war with Korea, they'll say, oh, he had the balls to do something Obama didn't do. Obama just did nothing, right? Like they like
That's
listen,
probably
these
true.
people like they want to support him. They like the rhetoric. They like the whole he tells it like it is. It allows us to say what we really want to say. There's no such thing as racism anymore. So screw you, black people. We can't stand you because you're lazy, blah, 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 blah. And that's just us telling it like it is. Like, that's the manifestation of all of it. It doesn't have anything to do with his policies, really. I mean, it's just that root cause,
It's his brand.
that whole thing of nationalism that he bit into. That's what's there. So it doesn't matter whether we go to war or not.
Okay, well, there's a sidebar, and I understand what you're saying. I'm choosing to be optimistic about this particular piece of the puzzle, and
Just like you're optimistic about the election.
yeah, okay, no, I wasn't. I was not optimistic at all. I thought Hillary was going to win. I wasn't happy about that. All right, so real, sorry, I'm thinking about 10 different things right now, but there was a gun control bill passed in Florida, signed by the governor today. This is another thing that really doesn't, in my opinion, make anything any better. It's gonna let politicians pat themselves on
Oh
the
my
back.
God, Jim. So did you see this?
What's that?
The Browns just acquired Tyrod Taylor from the
Are you
Bills
f all
for
right? All right, are you fucking with me?
Jim, I wouldn't do this to
You,
you.
you,
Yeah. I
you.
mean, I would, but I'm not.
Yeah,
But
okay,
it's
you
actually
absolutely would. No, I have
wrong.
not seen that. Oh my goodness, that's for what? What did they get for him?
Third round pick.
That shocks the hell out of me. They had pretty much said that they were going to not make a move until they had the quarterback situation settled. Obviously, that changed. Wow. Okay. Sports show, sports interruption. This is like the third time there's been a major Buffalo Bills thing happen while we were recording. Last one was Marcel
Yeah.
Darius, and I thought you were
And the
fucking with me
question
on
is
that.
why do I always know it before you?
That is an excellent question. I mean, well, because my phone's on Do Not Disturb, so we can have this conversation is why in this case.
Ah, right.
I would bet you there's going to be 10 things popping up. But the Darius thing was crazy because I thought you were fucking with me the whole time, and you got to watch my meltdown and wow, that's interesting. And the fact that it impacts the Bills and the Browns, so then loosely the Steelers. What are your thoughts about it?
I think it's a good move for the Browns. I think it allows the Browns to comfortably draft a quarterback at number one and not really have to worry about Tyrod Taylor's ego, because Tyrod Taylor has been an average quarterback the last, 3 seasons. And so, he's just one of those guys, kind of like Alex Smith, where he's just always going to be on the ropes. He may come out, and you look at what the Browns did today. They traded for Jarvis Landry. They got him from the Dolphins, a wide receiver. So you match up Jarvis Landry with Josh Gordon, and you bring in a Tyrod Taylor, who now Tyrod Taylor has two dynamic guys to throw to, and Todd Haley, an offensive coordinator who's not afraid to go downfield, who's not afraid to attack. You could see a potential really talented team. And you have Duke Johnson on that Browns team, who's a good running back who can catch out of the backfield. I think he led the league. He led all running backs with receptions and yards this year, or close to it. And so you have some pieces now where, you know, this team will not go 0-16 again. You know, will they be a playoff contender? I don't think so, because they have some serious questions on the defense. But I think you have a team that, that's kind of starting to take form. And now you can draft a guy in the first round with that first pick and not have to worry, not necessarily have to worry about him playing right away. You know, not have to worry about him being the savior. You can probably get a year or so out of Tyrod Taylor before you have to bring some kid on and, you know, kind of see what happened, or you can avoid what happened with DeShone Kizer this year, where he just got thrown to the wolves before he was ready and may have caused irreparable harm to his career.
You know, while you were talking, I opened the Buffalo Bills app and the WGR, the radio sports radio station in Buffalo app, and neither of them have anything on this. And that's not me questioning your sources, because when the fucking Darius thing went down, same thing. How do the Buffalo... this is fucking ridiculous.
I mean,
stop enjoying my frustration so much.
I'm not. I don't know why you think that. I really don't enjoy your frustrations. I don't revel in your pain and anguish as much as you think I do. I'm really not that cold blooded.
I don't think you're reveling. I'm not in pain. You know that I had kind of, you know, I clearly said I did not want Tyrod Taylor back with the same offensive coordinator. If they would have kept that duo together, I would not have dealt well with it. I'm not upset that Tyrod's gone, but I was curious if Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator, could do something. You know, so now we're definitely starting from scratch at that position.
I think, you know, he's a relatively young coordinator, and which isn't necessarily bad, as we see some of these young guys are really creative. And they have some dynamic offenses because they, you know, the defenses aren't that much different, and their offenses are different. And so, you know, like they're creating space and, you know, allowing for things to happen that, you know, some of these old, you know, these West Coast offenses and things like that just aren't quite as effective against. Now, you know, I think there's some, you know, depending on what happens with the Bills, if they, you know, if a guy like a Josh Rosen drops, which he could, because there are some questions about, you know, the most ridiculous thing, and I don't want to get too much into the draft, but a guy like Josh Rosen, there, you know, everyone questions, well, is he really into football? Like, he's into, you know, he's really into political movements, and he's got outspoken political opinions and thoughts about the economy, and he's got a diverse, like, get that shit out of here. The kid, when he's on the field, he can sling the rock. He's a student of the game. And, you know, you can have diverse interests and not necessarily, and still be, you know, a high-end quarterback. I don't buy that bullshit at all. So there's potential there for the Bills to pick up someone. You know, where are you guys drafting that?
Number 21 and number 22. And what I do not want them to do.
Okay, so Josh Rosen won't be there. I thought you had the 11 pick.
No.
Well, Josh Rosen is off the board. So, who could be in play for the Bills is a Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. I think Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph are the most likely two to be still around if they stay in those positions. And
Lamar Jackson's not going anywhere. Lamar Jackson's not.
Well, switching. No. There's a lot of idiots in Buffalo, mostly working for the sports radio station I mentioned earlier, who are like, if I'm the Bills, I'm trading number 21, number 22, my first rounder next year, a player and another pick. And I'm like, then you're a fucking idiot. Giving up five assets to draft a quarterback in a deep draft. You saw how I reacted to the Sammy Watkins trade. If they do that bullshit, just lock me in a room for 2.5 months.
Yeah,
crazy.
I'll have the tranquilizer.
Thank you, please.
Yeah,
go for the jugular vein. I'll need a big dose.
Yeah. There's some potential there for the Bills. I think, you know, you get a young quarterback in there. I could also see the Bills maybe then saying, all right, you know, we got a third round pick and then let's bundle something. And then maybe they go for like an AJ McCarron, you know, and which they feel, you know, he doesn't have the same amount of experience as a Tyrod Taylor, but, you know, they just feel that he looks the part and maybe has shown in the little bit of tape that we have, he's shown enough where they feel they can work with him.
Yeah, I would not be thrilled about that move. I'm not an AJ McCarron guy, but that wouldn't be crazy. So the Browns in the last couple days have acquired, or was it today that they got Jarvis Landry?
Yeah, that happened today.
So Jarvis Landry and Tyrod Taylor in the same day. And Jarvis Landry's an interesting spot, right? Because he just signed a franchise tag. And
yeah, and the report is that he's willing to get a long term deal done with the Browns, once the deal is officially done. So, you know, I will be very interested to see, what the Browns do, because the other thing the Browns could do is, I mean, now you have Tyrod Taylor, maybe you go Saquon Barkley at one, to get another dynamic playmaker in there. So now, you know, you'll still have, I mean, at four, if you take Saquon Barkley at one, so two and three, even if they take Josh Allen and someone takes Sam Darnold, you know, that still leaves you with a couple, quality choices there at quarterback.
Baker Mayfield's there and.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield, Josh Rosen, I think I like Josh Rosen a little bit more. But you still have some guys there that could fit in, and now you have a guy out of the backfield in Saquon Barkley who's dynamic. You got Josh Gordon who's proven to be dynamic as long as he can stay on the field. You have a Jarvis Landry there, and you have a Corey Coleman who wasn't good, and he was a receiver on an 0-16 team, but has shown potential. And when you put that many other guys around him, who knows how he could develop. There's a lot of potential there for the Browns, I think. So,
I mean, they're certainly making bold moves. You got to give them credit for that.
That's John Dorsey. He's their new general manager. They brought him in, kind of actually in the mid, like towards the end of this season. They fired Sashi Brown, who was just moving way too slow in developing the team. But what Sashi Brown did do is he did give him a very young base to work with, right?
Right, and a ton of cap space.
The youngest team in the league by far. And there are some pieces, parts there that, Sashi Brown and, even a little bit of Ray Farmer added. Now you got to get away from the analytics. Now you need to bring in, true football players. And that seems to be what they're doing.
I want to talk to you about the franchise tag, because you and I have had a bunch of discussions about, athletes making money and the, white guy with the lunchbox, I'd play the game for free. That's a topic you've gone off on a few times. And the franchise tag really lights that fire, because someone gets paid a huge amount of money guaranteed for 1 year, and the players hate getting it done to them. And the person on the outside who says, I'd play this game for free, goes nuts because Jarvis Landry is bitching about getting a one-year deal worth $16 million, and I don't know how much Le'Veon Bell got when he was franchise tagged. It really highlights the business aspect of the NFL, and it also stokes that fire of, middle-class, lower-middle-class people seeing these athletes making that money and losing their minds.
You have to understand what the franchise tag is. I mean, it's a one-year guaranteed deal where you get paid, the average of the top five guys at your position. And it is a bundle of money right there up front, and that's great. But the problem is, if you get hurt, then there's nothing that's guaranteed. Now, NFL contracts aren't guaranteed like basketball contracts or baseball contracts, where I think Bobby Bonilla is still somehow getting paid by the Mets.
He is.
But the NFL contracts, there is some guarantee. Like if you sign a 7-year deal and you get hurt in year three, you don't get the same amount of, you don't get all the money you would get, let's say, if that were an NBA contract or a Major League Baseball contract, but you still get a pretty decent amount of
sure.
that, right? Like, so you sign a deal for, let's say you sign a 5-year deal for $10 million per year, and then you do a signing bonus of, you know, we'll say $20 million just to make it easy, right? So if you do that, that's, you know, $50 million in salary and then another $20 million in a bonus. So you're at $70 million, right? Now, if you get hurt, right, in year three of that, well, you still have the $20 million signing bonus. And then you have the first 2 years of that contract. So now you're up to $40 million. And then you may get some sort of a medical settlement for the remaining, the remaining 2 years on that 5-year deal. So you walk out of there with, let's say, $50 million. Right, on a $70 million contract. Now, if you let's say you franchise, right, you take the franchise tag for this year and it's $11 million just for this 1 year, and you get hurt at any point in time in this year, then that's all you get is $11 million. And now, and because you didn't get a deal, you have potentially left anywhere from, you know,
30, 40 million,
anywhere from 20 to $70 million on the table. Right. And that's why the guys are pissed, because
I understand,
listen, you can be as mad as you want to be about the amount of money that the guys make, but it's still a business. So once you take away the massive amount, like, just look at it, like, put yourself in those same shoes on your level. What would you rather have, the long-term security or the one-time burst? And I think that's where it, and when you look at it that way, it makes sense why the guys get upset and they hate the franchise tag.
I totally get it. And this is something I can completely see both sides of the equation. I see why a player says, you know, you're inserting risk into my life and taking away my big chance of that huge payday. And I understand why teams say, you know, we negotiated this for a reason. We're going to pay you a shit ton of money. What I have a hard time with are the guys who get franchise tagged and then say, you know what, I'm going to hold out. Well, you're not in the long run, because you're, even though you might think you're deserving of that $40 million payday, turning down the 11 is crazy. And it is 11 guaranteed for 1 year, and you're right, there's no guarantees after that. So I understand why players don't like it. I understand why GMs use it. What I don't understand are the guys who say, to spite you for doing this, I'm going to fuck with my team.
Yeah, you know why they do it?
Because I don't exactly why, but I just don't agree with it.
This year for the Texans.
Was that?
It was a tackle. They put the franchise tag on him. He was offensive tackle, and he said, I'm not playing, because ultimately, and if you look, there were a lot of offensive linemen who went down this year with, you know, some pretty serious leg injuries. I mean, Joe Thomas went out this year, and Joe Thomas hadn't missed a game in, you know, his entire career. So, you know, that particular player sat out until the middle of the season, came back, and then they ended up working out a trade, and I think they sent him to Seattle. And he ends up getting the big deal, but part of it is football is such a brutal sport. Like, some guys say, listen, I've made enough money to this point where I'd rather sit out and not make money, where in money, you know, money not earned is money that you can't earn back. I understand that. But if you think that the team will ultimately cave because of your importance and value, then maybe it does make sense to say, okay, you know, I'm going to sit out and wait them out and then come back to this again, because I don't want to risk that devastating injury that's going to take a $70 million deal and turn it into a $10 million deal.
I get it. I mean, so the perfect illustration of that, though, is Le'Veon Bell, right? He was tagged with a franchise tag, said, if you do that, I'll retire. Now he's saying, no, I'm not going to retire. So it's understandable why Le'Veon Bell would bluff, for lack of a better word.
Here's the thing with Le'Veon Bell. Like, again, I mean, let's not be too dismissive of what he's doing.
I hope he gets traded to the Browns during this conversation, by the way.
Obviously, he's being very, when he says he's going to retire, he's going over the top. I mean, he did sit out of training camp last year. And he said he will sit out of training camp again this year and come in after the preseason because he's like he, you know, he for damn sure doesn't want to get hurt, you know, in training camp or in a preseason game. When, you know, when he's playing on the franchise tag. But part of, you know, his situation is a little bit different because while the Steelers aren't as good without Le'Veon Bell, they've got Big Ben, they've got Anthony, they've
Antonio
got
Brown.
Brown, they've got Martavis Bryant, Jesse James, like they've got some weapons there, Juju Smith-Schuster. And so he knows that while they won't be quite as dynamic without him, that they can survive without him. So his sitting out for the season doesn't advance his position all that much, you know, and if it, and you know, be, and he knows that running backs can, you know, but that's how, you know, a running back can come in and kind of catch fire. So obviously he's going to come in and play, but he is trying to push the Steelers to get a deal done. And part of the problem with Le'Veon Bell is he is the team's leading rusher and he's also the second leading receiver. And so he wants to be paid for that. He basically wants to be paid like a number one running back and a number two receiver.
You know,
which is, I don't even know what he's asking for. But I think it's between $12 and $14 million a year.
You know, I you and I talk sports quite a bit, and I'm one of the guys that says running backs are one of the easiest positions in the league to replace without a huge drop off. Having said that, there are exceptions, and Le'Veon Bell is one of them. He's got a skill set that is just amazing to watch, even if you're not a Steelers fan, which everyone who knows me knows I am not. But like he is a, it's not so much just his physical gifts; it's his vision and his. It seems like he's controlling the speed of the game at times. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, he has amazing patience, he has amazing vision, and he's got an amazing burst. And those things as a running back or a receiver, really, I mean, because he's also got great hands, just make him amazingly dynamic and hard to stop. You can slow him down, but at some point in time, he's going to break off and get his and impact the game. And, you know, it happens, he does it almost 16 games a year. So, you know, and that in and of itself has a certain amount of value. Now, where he has hurt himself in the past is, one, he got injured early on a couple of times and didn't finish the season, and that hurts his value. And then, you know, he had multiple suspensions for weed and cannabis, and that hurts as well. So, you know, the Steelers are looking at that and saying, can we trust you? And can we trust you to stay healthy, which you don't have a lot of control over? And can we trust you to not do something stupid? Which, you know, this year he didn't have any issues with weed or, you know, drugs or anything like that, which is good. But, you know, who's to say once you give a guy a $90 million contract that he doesn't
right.
get a little, he doesn't get a little lax. Now, I don't think he will, but it's something that the Steelers can say and should say when they're trying to underwrite this deal and say, you know, does it make sense? Can we trust them? And so that's where there's gotta be, you know, there's going to have to be some give and take. I think the Steelers have, and I think that's where it's at. I think they've said, you know, we look at what you're doing on the field. We're well aware of your contribution, but this is where you've hurt us. You know, games we needed you, you weren't on the field because of injury, because you were suspended. And so we're going to knock a few million off of this contract per year. And that's where they're going to have to figure out, you know, what the nexus is.
You know, so I've had my TV has been on MSNBC while we've been talking on mute, obviously. And the headlines have popped up while we've been talking have been Trump quotes, "I'm tired of being reined in." Putin on Trump, he seems like a really reasonable guy. And Sam Nunberg, who is becoming the next comical political figure and saying that he's going to defy grand jury orders. And he's a lawyer who doesn't seem to understand what that really implies. Sorry for the sidebar, but I do have, I do want to throw one more thing out there about politics. And that is that.
Hey, before you do that, though, so. The Packers just traded Demaryius Randle to the Browns. it's a he's a cornerback. Oh my God, the Browns are just they said that's this. They pulled a book out of the Cleveland Cavs and said we'll just flip the whole damn team.
Wow. Hey, you know what? It's when you suck as bad as they have, and you have that kind of cap space and that kind of draft collateral, you can steer the league, and that's what they're doing. I mean,
I still have not gotten to push. And you know, like Sashi Brown wouldn't have done this. You know, I mean, and these guys are no one. You know, Landry is still young. Tyrod, you know, he's a little bit older. I think Tyrod Taylor is like 28. You know, Demarius Randall is still young. So, I mean, these are all good moves. But anyway, sorry. Please go back to the politics that are not nearly as interesting as what's going on in the NFL right now. Continue.
But anyway, I'm annoyed because I don't have any of the stuff coming through. Here I am focused on our show, not getting my live stream done. Sorry. So
that wasn't even an insult because you didn't, whatever you were trying to say, you didn't say it right. not getting my live stream done. What does that even mean?
I've been drinking whiskey this entire time. I've been drinking Knob Creek, which is, I'm not going to score it because we're not drinking it together, but, that probably didn't come out the way I wanted it to. So Stacey Dash, former actress, former Fox news person.
She was in a Kanye West video too.
Oh,
and I mean, I hate to say it, but she is smoking hot. So there's that.
And she is trying to become the congresswoman from the 44th district of California, which which encompasses, I think you told me, Compton, Inglewood, predominantly black.
Pretty much. That's Dr. Dre and Ice Cube area.
So, that my thoughts on this are, you can never say a celebrity can't become a politician anymore. I mean, that's been disproven multiple times, and now in the presidency, in the ultimate case. I know that she was a super conservative, super hot black woman who was on Fox. I don't know a whole hell of a lot about her, to be honest with you, other than what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I don't know where her. I don't know where. I don't know if she's got a degree, if she went to college, where it came from. Not that that's required to be a congressman, but or congresswoman in her case. You know, I watched her a couple of times on Fox, and she doesn't really blow you away with, you know, this intelligence or insightfulness that you would want in a congressperson or a person representing.
I guarantee she's smart enough to make a snowball, carry it into Congress, and say, see, global warming isn't real.
Well, and here's the problem. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, as I've gotten older and the more I've paid attention to what our politicians are saying, I'm realizing that even if these guys are Ivy League educated, they're just so out of touch with what's happening in their districts, what's happening in the country. You know, they have this ridiculous bird's eye view, and they don't relate well. They don't speak for anyone other than corporations. And whoever gives them the most money. And so, you know, my expectation of what we're getting out of our politicians has been greatly diminished. And so now when I look at a person like Stacey Dash or I look at a Donald Trump, I can't even say, well, you're not qualified, because I think the whole thing of qualifications has been just destroyed. Right. It's been completely dismantled. And now it's just, do you look the part? Do you sound the part? Do you toe the line? Do you have financial backing? Right. If you look the part and sound the part, we can get you financial backing, and whatever your past is, we can spin that into some sort of a story on the campaign trail. And then once we get you in, As long as you vote yes on these particular issues, then we can keep you in office. And that's Democrat or Republican.
Right. And here's the thing. Here's why she becomes a significant figure in the 2018 congressional race. It's going to be a crazy race. I mean, all these people who are speculating that the Democrats are going to take back both houses of Congress are pissing me off, because it's a wild assumption with a level of arrogance and lax thinking that I'm very uncomfortable with. But
Well, I mean, they're basing it off of Alabama. They're basing it off of
sure, I get it.
Virginia. And, you
But
know, but
if
I think that both those were extreme, especially obviously Alabama was a very extreme case with Roy Moore and what was going on there. So,
an
you know, I
accused
mean, and the
child.
Republicans, you know, and Steve Bannon just made a huge critical error in pushing Moore instead of Luther Strange. You know,
Right.
you get Luther Strange in there.
Yeah,
You know, and
he
it's
walks into the end zone, no doubt.
what's that?
Luther Strange walks into the end zone in that race. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, he walks in backwards. So, I mean, that was a gift basically handed over to Democrats from the Republicans. You know, the rest of them won't be that easy. You know, Virginia was a result of a huge effort on the ground by the Democrats, which we were talking about earlier, and Alabama was too. But it wasn't hard for people to see what was going on in Alabama. And, you know, the race got really ugly in Virginia as well. And so if the Democrats are going to cause this blue wave that they're talking about, they're going to need to see that type of effort across the board, because there's going to be no easy wins for Democrats. There's just not going to be. And there shouldn't be. Not that there should be easy wins for the Republicans, because they're not doing any better. But, you know, as a African American black male, like, I'm pissed as shit at the Democrats. Like, what the hell are they doing? You know, I don't. There's a lot of people, you know, that are waiting to see what they do, what their actual message is. They've been really tone deaf the last, you know, 20 years.
Say 105 years.
Yeah, I mean, really since their inception. I mean, because it, you know, before the big Dixie flip, you know, they were definitely not going in my favor. And so, you know, the Democrats, I think, have a lot of work to do, and they can sit there and churn up all this false bravado about the big blue wave that's coming. But if they're not ready to step up to the plate like they did in Virginia and Alabama, they could be sitting there with control of nothing, and Donald Trump with momentum going into 2020.
Well, here's why I think Stacey Dash is interesting, because from a few, now I'm going to go purely political analyst and strategist on you. She is running in a district that has historically zero chance of going Republican. Her looks and her celebrity will make her someone the Democrats have to spend money to defeat, which means money that the Democratic National Committee wants to spend in places like Alabama and Virginia, now they're going to have to spend in Compton.
No, that's I disagree with that.
Why?
I mean, listen, it's well known throughout the black community who and what Stacey Dash is. And I actually am somewhat offended by the fact that you think that people are going to vote for her just because of her looks, like in the black community. No. Stacey Dash is not going to get black women to vote. And you know, in that area, she's not going to move the needle enough to where Democrats are going to spend any money to try to slow her down. They may throw a little bit more than they would have previously. And if you want to say, hey, that's, you know, $10,000 that
No,
could have
no, no.
gone to
I'm
someone, you
not going to go
know,
that petty.
they're not going to have to spend enough money where it'll matter to
Oh, I mean, all
anybody
right. So
else,
you, I
I
mean,
promise.
so okay. I guess I'm doing the Sarah Palin factor when I'm saying that Sarah Palin had no business becoming the governor of a state, but she was a former,
Yeah, but look at the demographics of the state.
fair, no, fair, fair. I'm not.
I mean,
I'm
look at
not.
the
I am
demographics
not.
of
Hold on. Hold
fucking
on. Hold on.
Compton
Hold
and
on. I
Watts.
am
Come
not
on,
comparing
let's
Compton and Wasilla, Alaska. Okay, don't put that on me. But I mean, if my comment there was out of touch white guy, I'll own that. You know better than me. But
Yeah.
that's what enters my head. And by the
Yeah,
way, the
I
people
mean,
would
it
be
was. It's not, I mean, I get it. You're trying to think strategically, but it's just there's nothing that.
Okay.
Voting history tells us that they're now, listen, I could be wrong and there could be a big, huge surprise. And, you know, if that happens, then I'll have to eat crow. But I'm like Stacey in this particular district, she doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell.
Okay.
She just doesn't.
Okay. But here's a reality that backs me up. You might be 100% right. But the people who are making those, if you're going to call me out of touch white guy, the problem is the people making that decision are out of touch white guys.
No.
Come on.
I think the people who are making the decision on how to spend money, like, they're going to look at it. They're not going to look at who they're up against. They're going to look at the history of that area. They're going to look at that district and say, this district has gone blue for the last however many decades. Does Stacey Dash threaten that? No. Okay. Will she get more support than the typical Republican gets? Maybe. I doubt it, because there's a serious backlash against her in the Black community. And we're talking about California. That's traditionally a blue state all the way through. In most sections, and we're talking about fucking Compton and Watts. I mean, your voter turnout is going to be garbage anyway, and the people who turn out to vote are going to be, you know, older Black people who are not going to vote for Stacey Dash. And I think that's the way that they're going to look at it, and they're going to say, we're not spending money over there.
You know, this is obviously a developing story, and I'm sure as 2018 approaches, we'll talk about it more. But I defer to your opinion and expertise when it comes to what's, you know, getting said in the Black churches and the Black community about politics. I think are you laughing at the fact that you haven't been in a Black church in a long ass time?
Oh, my expertise in the Black churches. Okay.
Well, no, but I think you're more qualified to say what will affect, you know, largely Black communities.
Which is fair. You're absolutely right. You know,
I just said it in a funny way.
I do. You know, I am more connected to those circles than you are by far. And I guess I do want to say, I'm not a political analyst. I'm not a political expert. You know, I mean, I guess I have a degree in political science.
So you do play one on our show, and you've been
right
a number of times.
So, but what I've been watching this stuff for a long time. And knowing how both parties think and how they spend money, they take a lot of different analytics in, but a big factor is history, and a big factor is demographics. You know, and history and demographics are strongly against Stacey Dash, and they're not going to throw precautionary money, not in this race. You know, if they know that they've got a slam dunk. They're not going to spend money there. Now, if they're wrong about that, then I guarantee you they will go back and analyze it. But I don't think they'll be wrong about it. So I don't think it really poses a risk.
Back to something you said before, though. If there's one thing the Alabama Senate race did, it's shine a light on the fact that you won this impossible victory in large part because of the predominantly Black, the Black vote. I mean, they came out in much larger numbers than were expected, especially in the special election, and they, flipped a seat that was considered untouchable. I mean, the reason our buddy Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III was chosen to be Attorney General is in large part because that was considered a very safe Senate seat, and then that did not end up being the case.
You're absolutely right. I mean, so that goes back to me saying that, you know, the Democrats have got to be very aggressive in their ground game, and, you know, getting on the phone, going door to door, going to churches, going to places where Black people are, you know, setting up some sort of center in these neighborhoods, getting young Black you know, activists out there, you know, talking to people as much as they can, getting in people's ear, getting them to vote, showing passion. Like they have to do it. They have to put a lot of energy into it. You know, there's some things that I've even thought about that, you know, I could do. You know, the one issue is that kind of here locally in Cleveland is a predominantly blue city area.
Right.
Right. This district usually goes pretty blue. You know, so you want to get people out to vote just to keep it that way. You know, if that's where your political leanings lie, but that's what's gonna have to happen. If they want to see some sort of a blue wave, or even if you want to just see a shift where you get control of the Congress, so at least that there's some balance, it's going to take a really Herculean effort on the Democrats' part, and you hope that they're prepared.
Yeah. All right. So we should probably wrap this up, but we started talking before we got on the air. We started talking about something, and I know you want to jump on this. I don't know where it's going to go. I just know it doesn't go well for me. But we were just talking about, all right, talk about the Wu-Tang Clan. Something happened with the Wu-Tang Clan. I have no idea.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I actually forgot where you were going, but now I know. Okay, so nothing happened with the Wu-Tang Clan. Martin Shkreli, who they call him the Pharma Bro, he was sentenced today, 7 years in prison. Right? Now, he was the guy who jacked up the prices of, you know, different medications that people needed to live. I think it was EpiPens. Is that right?
No. EpiPens was a different one. This is the guy who jacked up the price on medications that fought HIV.
Yeah. Medications that people need that were, I mean, he jacked it up like 500% or something like that.
I think it was much more than that, actually. But
it was some crazy amount. But either way, I mean, he made these medications all of a sudden unaffordable. And then that wasn't necessarily illegal, but then he had done some other things after the fact or before the fact that were defrauding investors. And he was found guilty of that and sentenced recently to 7 years in prison. Now,
correct.
Where the Wu-Tang Clan comes in is a couple of years ago, the Wu-Tang Clan made an album where they only made one copy. And then they put it for auction and they said, whoever gets it, they get the album and you do with it what you want. So Martin Shkreli,
yep.
Pharma Bro, won that auction and he got the album. And then, you know, in typical dickhead fashion, he's just like, nope, not releasing it. It's mine and mine only. Well, when they sentenced him today, the FBI seized the Wu-Tang album. And so the question is, like, what happens to it? You know, I think that they should auction it off again, and hopefully whoever gets it, you know, like they release it or whatever, because obviously as a Wu-Tang fan, I want to hear it. You know, I mean, you know, and they're not the first ones to do it. I don't know. I can't remember how much he paid for it, but it was a crazy, I mean, it was an insane amount of money that he paid for it. I don't know how.
I'm glad I didn't know this prior to our conversation, so I could experience this on recording.
Yeah, it's nuts. But I know the feds seized it. Now, what I don't know is, like, they seized it. He's going to jail for 7 years. So, does it get auctioned, or do they just hold it, and then does he get his possessions back? Now, I'm thinking because he defrauded people, he owes money, and so that they'll auction it off to help pay back restitution to the people that he owes money to, legal fees and all that other stuff. So it will be interesting to see what happens to that. I'll definitely.
Perhaps the most amazing part of this is Martin Shkreli is one of the few human beings on this planet who makes me look straight out of Compton. Own it. No, you don't. You can't.
Okay,
that's a Martin Shkreli comment, not a Jim comment.
I mean, yeah, I mean he is. I mean, he's just a small.
I've done a push up in my life. I win.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, and not the size is everything,
right,
but I mean, he's a very small, unintimidating. You know,
I'm a nerd. I'm a nerd. That guy makes me look like whatever. Okay. I'm not going to dangle something out there because you won't give it to me, but I'm right.
I don't want to bash a guy too much on his looks. I mean, he is a little down on his luck going to jail for 7 years, and I don't know how well things will go for him there.
I think you do know. Well, he's going to go to his version of prison will not be he's going to jail for defrauding investors.
He's not going to bang me in the ass jail. So,
right, exactly.
He'll probably go somewhere that's,
got conjugal visits, yes.
Like so, that's what's going on with that. You know what? I am actually running short on time. I need to, got some things to do. Need to get my weekend started. You have a jump on me on the whiskey, and I am jealous. So
a solid jump. I'll have you know. All right, man. Good talking to you. I'm sure we'll talk in the next couple of days. And now I need to grab my phone and see how many freaking alerts about the Tyrod Taylor trade I missed, and turn on Buffalo Sports Talk Radio, where who knows what stupidity will be going on. So, yeah. All right, man. Good talking to you. Any final words?
No, man, just, you are out in North Carolina through the week, right?
So, yeah, I fly back Friday.
All right. Well, stay out of the hills, be careful. And, we'll talk to you guys later.
I'm going to the beach tomorrow. Out.